from Springfield. This is State Week, a program of analysis and commentary on the events that made news this past week in Illinois state government and politics.
There is a sense of urgency. I think both the Senate President and Leader Redonio have been expressing a sense of urgency. They've both given us that direction, seriously.
We really need to discipline ourselves to get to a balanced budget and avoid shortcuts or temporary solutions that are just, once again, more Band-Aids on a problem that we just cannot continue to escape.
Governor Bruce Rauner wants to sell the state office building, but Emanuel says he needs to know how the state will deal with the busy L station that's underneath it.
I'm not going to stick that on Chicago taxpayers. The developer or the state has to do it.
The sponsor calls this the Trust Act. Maybe that's appropriately named, but ironically, the issue here is whether or not the citizens of this state can trust that law enforcement has the power to detain people who are a significant risk to national security.
If a person is afraid to go to the hospital because they think that they might be detained, or if they're afraid to speak to law enforcement, we all are in danger. That creates danger for all of us.
I just don't want to lose the irony of the moment that we're going to pass a law to tell law enforcement not to enforce the law.
Well, less than a month to go before the scheduled end of the General Assembly spring session. A lot of issues are getting debated in the General Assembly right now. And we're going to talk about some of those and where the budget situation stands as well. All ahead today on State Week coming up. I'm Sean Crawford in Springfield, and our panel today includes Charlie Wheeler. Charlie runs the Public Affairs Reporting Program at the University of Illinois Springfield. Also today in our State House studio, Brian Mackey, the IPR State House reporter. And coming to us from Chicago and member station WBEZ, politics reporter Tony Arnold. Tony, thanks for being with us again.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Tony and Brian, I'll go to you first on this budget issue. That's, of course, what everybody's trying to figure out. Are they going to get something done? Where do things stand?
Well, on the question of whether they're going to get something done, I'll give you my standard answer. I have no idea. All expectations have been dashed time and again. But there are apparently negotiations going on in the Senate, and the Rauner administration is involved in that about it's not entirely clear what they're trying to do, you know, pass a budget as well as sort of revive the grand bargain. I'm picturing that old TV show Emergency where they have those paddles, they rub them together and stick them on the chest, clear, and trying to get some life back into this idea of some sort of trade-off of some of the non-budget items that Governor Bruce Rauner has been pushing for, such as a property tax freeze, changes to the workers' compensation system, changes to Illinois' government pension systems, as well as tax increases of some sort or another, exactly what remains in flux, and spending cuts in state government, which, of course, we've had 22 months of a budget impasse where you've had sort of some areas of state government have been slashed, like human services, higher education. Other areas of state government have been spending willy-nilly, such as state employee paychecks. So that is apparently being negotiated, but I'm not going to be super optimistic until I actually see a bill getting put on the floor and put up for votes.
And Tony, are you hearing anything different on that?
No, I guess what I'd say is, during this, it's been every week there's something new about the consequences of this that in theory is going to put pressure on the people who pass budgets to actually, do something other than what they've been doing for 22 months. And this week, the consequences that we learned some doctors who provide Medicaid services see Medicaid patients in Illinois are not getting paid, and they're not getting paid so much that they're saying we're not going to see any more Medicaid patients. There's been a court filing that was made in federal court in Chicago from 25 different healthcare organizations saying how much they're owed by the state of Illinois and how long it's taken. The most extreme example was that it's been 7 months since they got paid for their Medicaid services. The insurance giants, Aetna, Meridian, Family Health Network, these are all managed care organizations that deal directly with Medicaid patients. $650 million owed to Aetna. The state owes Meridian $557 million. Family Health Network, $213 million. These are large amounts for these giant organizations. So they're saying that they're not now paying, reimbursing doctors for seeing Medicaid patients. And as a result, the doctors are saying, well, we can't rely on this, so we're not going to see some of these Medicaid patients. There's one provider in Grays Lake, Illinois, in Chicago's northern suburbs. 2,000 Medicaid patients there are at risk of losing their doctor, or having to switch their doctor. It's all over the state, and actually, it's outside of state. Community health care in Davenport, which sees 10,000 Illinois Medicaid patients, is owed $560,000. There's Heartland Health in Peoria, $265,000 there. There's Touchette Hospital in East St. Louis, $8 million, 100,000 Medicaid patients. It's all over. And so this is new information now that they're not going to they're going to stop seeing Medicaid patients if this keeps going on.
And Charlie, so, let me go to you real quick, because this is always an issue as far as, you know, the treatment of Medicaid patients. Doctors are paid less than they are for many, you know, seeing many other patients. But this is a big deal when you think of how many people in the state of Illinois are on Medicaid, and it's been a growing number.
Yeah, it's I don't have the exact figure at hand, but it's in excess of 1 million people. The vast majority of them are children and moms, although the percentage-wise, higher amounts are spent to care for the elderly. But it's just a symptom of what's going on across the state. And Tony was talking about how people are having to wait 7 months, some of these managed care organizations. Well, there's been no appropriation for state employees for their group insurance, and so the delays in paying those providers are in excess of a year, and in certain instances, more than 2 years. So this is a situation that is causing a lot of harm to a lot of people, and it's going to continue to get worse until the General Assembly and the governor reach an agreement to fund these services.
And let me go back to you, Tony, because you were saying how the pressure that's on some of these lawmakers to get some type of deal, something worked out to try to alleviate some of these issues. Are you hearing from any of them? Or have you talked to some of those and get a feel of whether or not something like a Medicaid lawsuit would help that situation and try to put more pressure on them?
What these Medicaid providers are asking is to be put to the front of the line by the comptroller, to basically be paid, have a federal judge mandate that the state pay them before other things. This has happened for a few other services too, but what happens when there's no more money, basically, to be, you're at the front of the line and you're still having to wait several months, which is what's going on because the backlog of bills is just getting longer and longer and longer the longer we go without a budget. I talked to Greg Harris, who's the chairman of the House Appropriations Committee for basically Medicaid services, who, you know, he basically said, well, the answer to this solution, or to this problem, rather, is to pass a budget. He didn't have anything more insightful to say than that. And so does this build up enough pressure to actually get some sort of deal? I don't know. This has been building for so long. It's just kind of inching closer and closer and closer to some sort of cliff. It's just taken us 22 months to get to where we are now. So, you know, Greg Harris is saying, well, when you have some of the largest corporations in the world, like Aetna or Meridian, talking about, you know, what not paying doctors to see Medicaid patients, well, that's significant. Maybe that's going to do something, but I think it partially depends on what this federal judge says next week when they're in court.
Once again, showing that it would be a judge or a court who has sort of a potentially decisive role in, or at least a significant role in how this budget stalemate is playing out. Remember, it's a judge and a state judge in St. Clair County who has authorized earlier this year. The figure was $3 billion in state employee paychecks to go out during the budget impasse. A lot of the money that's been spent on health care and other caring for the disabled in Illinois has gone out under judicial orders, and it's because the legislators have not been able to come to an agreement. You know, Tony talked about this sort of every week. There's another I don't know if revelation is the right term, but consequence, or it comes into public consciousness that these consequences are out there. There was an interesting hearing where there actually was some bipartisan agreement this week, and it's the opposite end. Tony was talking about these huge international companies that owed hundreds of millions of dollars. Well, the state also owes less than $3 million in chunks as small as $5,000 to $220,000 to 18 men who were wrongfully convicted of crimes later found innocent. So these are not people who there was like some kind of legal technicality or something like that. They were, you know, often taken up cases for free by these innocence projects around the state, and they were exonerated. They got certificates of exoneration. They say the process essentially requires them to sort of, after they get out of prison, they have to go back before a judge and sort of reprove their innocence. They get this certificate. They go to the Illinois State Court of Claims. State law says, based on how long you are incarcerated, you get a set amount of money. For over 14 years, the amount is $220,000. Some of these men spent as much as 25 years wrongfully in prison before they were exonerated and freed. And when you get out of prison, you have nothing. You don't even get bus fare like you do if you are, just coming to the end of your normal prison term. One guy told me he had $14.70 in his prison account, and they basically opened the door, handed him the money, and said, leave. So, they have been waiting during the budget impasse to get their compensation. Senator Donnie Trotter from Chicago has a bill up that would make this a continuing appropriation so that, you know, even if the legislature doesn't pass a budget, much like pension payments, legislator paychecks, a few other things, bond payments, it would become an automatic payment for the state of Illinois. And although there was some initial resistance, it seemed like there might be yet another partisan breakdown on this bill. The Republicans appeared to be moved by the story they heard from an exoneree, a man who'd been in prison for 25 years. And it was a unanimous bipartisan vote to approve this in committee. Now it still has to get through the full Senate, still has to get through the House, still has to be signed by the governor before it would become law. But it shows that, you know, on some things, there is some penetrating of the political minds set around here, and that, you know, perhaps it's a small amount of money. So I don't know how much you can extrapolate that, but there was at least a tiny, tiny amount of bipartisan cooperation on something related to state spending.
I got the impression, too, from reading some of the comments of the lawmakers, that the attitude was colored by the fact that these individuals were not there of their own choosing. Unlike some business that signs a contract with the state, and you might say, well, should have known that the state's a deadbeat, so you're taking your chances when you sign something with Illinois. These individuals were innocent people plucked off the street by overzealous law enforcement, and through no fault of their own, they're in this situation. And that struck me as one of the things that maybe contributed to the bipartisanship.
And it was interesting how that evolved, because Senator Chapin Rose, who's the on this particular Senate Budget Committee, is the ranking Republican member, he initially expressed some skepticism and said, you know, I'm angry about your case. It's terrible that this is happening. But if we make this special, you know, case, continuing appropriation for exonerees, aren't, you know, human services have terrible stories to tell too. And he seemed to be heading towards a no vote. Then a different Republican senator, Senator Dan McConkie, I believe from the suburbs, made that point that you were repeating, Charlie, about how, you know, it's different when even a nonprofit human service, you know, sort of do-gooder agency signs a contract with the state. That's different than somebody who was snatched off the street wrongfully, you know, framed essentially, or at least, you know, convicted on bad information at best, and spends potentially decades in prison. That's a different situation. And you could see the Republicans sort of like walking back, and Senator Chapin Rose ultimately said, you know, yeah, this is a different case. You know, we should support this bill.
At the same time, he's saying that and you hate to – you wouldn't want to go against these folks like Charlie mentioned. This is some pretty sad stories to tell there, and these people did nothing wrong and yet wound up paying for it with a lot of years of their life. At the same time, when I hear a lot of this talk of continuing appropriations, it does send a bit of a shiver up the spine in thinking that – are we ever going to get back to having an actual budget put together, or is this the way state government could operate in the foreseeable future if more of this does occur?
I would argue that it's not going to be something that is going to be extended broadly to everything. I would be very doubtful of that. And the one flashpoint that we've talked about in the past, the one thing that could make it happen would be if there was no money appropriated for education. Because throughout this two-year span, when the governor and the lawmakers have been derelict and everything else, they have approved normal budgets, normal in the sense of going through the regular process, for elementary and secondary education. And so I don't see that as being something that would ever become a continuing appropriation because it's such a big chunk of the entire budget.
Well, I was certainly thrilled this week to see that we have a gubernatorial candidate running ads. Of course, we've seen the governor doing his ads. Now we've got a Democrat doing it. We're almost still a year away from the primary. This is J.B. Pritzker. Tony, you covered a big endorsement session in which he was endorsed by a lot of unions in the Chicago area. Can you tell us more about J.B. Pritzker?
Yeah, J.B. Pritzker. I mean, if you haven't seen the ads, you're going to. We're a year away from the primary, and he's running 60-second ads in the Chicago market. I think around the state, and those are really expensive to do. And this ad is basically an introduction of him to the people that he's trying to get to vote in next year's Democratic primary. And in addition to that, then he announced. I think there's a little more than a dozen trade unions around Chicago that endorsed his campaign. And he had this big rally. He didn't take questions from reporters at this thing, but it was just a typical, a lot of fanfare and music and kind of a rally. And it, in his speech, I haven't heard Pritzker give too many speeches just yet. But he only talked about Bruce Rauner and said about what you'd expect a Democratic candidate to say about Bruce Rauner, but he didn't acknowledge that he's in this what's going to be a very competitive primary. He didn't mention his challengers, Chris Kennedy, State Senator Daniel Biss, Alderman Amaya Pawar, Bob Diber from Madison County Schools. So that's coming up. I think for now this endorsement's significant because it drew out some of the criticisms from his opponents, saying, "How do these unions know who J.B. Pritzker is yet? This is so early. Why are they doing this?" Daniel Biss had a statement that basically said, "These are unions doing the work of Speaker Madigan, basically on behalf of J.B. Pritzker. This was already decided before they even know anything about his voting record or where he stands on things." So there's already, it was a pretty critical statement from the Biss campaign about this endorsement, and I think it's just setting the path here for how, competitive's being polite here. I think how really difficult this campaign is going to be on the Democratic side.
And Tony, do we know whether or not the speaker favors a particular candidate?
Well, I think no. I haven't heard Madigan himself say how he feels about things, other than at the conventions, the big political conventions last year, and during the presidential race, he said that he's been meeting with some of these candidates, Kennedy and Pritzker in particular. But I think that there is something to be said about how some of these unions have operated in the past, their support of the Democratic Party and chairman, the chairman of that party, Mike Madigan, through that process. It does kind of speak to that. Has Madigan or will Madigan ever address specifically who he favors? I'd be surprised to hear it directly from the horse's mouth.
And didn't Pritzker have some history with some of those unions when he ran before?
Yeah,
for public
they
office?
Mentioned. Yeah, Pritzker ran for Congress 20 years ago against Jan Schakowsky. He lost in the primary to Schakowsky, and some of those unions who endorsed him this week for governor said that 20 years ago they endorsed him in Congress. So there is some history there with him. And he, clearly Pritzker's been involved in Democratic Party politics over his career here. So maybe they did have some interactions with him, but that didn't stop, you know, the Biss campaign saying, you know, things like, well, they were going to endorse him anyway.
Brian, we're still waiting to hear whether or not there's going to be some agreement to sell the James R. Thompson Center in Chicago. Anything moving on that?
No, nothing moving, because I think this is going to be a terrible transition, but they want to keep the L trains moving. And so that's the problem, is that the L trains movement through the James R. Thompson Center. Tony, correct me if I'm wrong. I think there's like six or so different trains that go through there.
Yeah, almost every route goes through the Thompson Center in one way or another, either next to it, above ground, or below the Thompson Center, underground.
Right, and so that really complicates the sale. So the Tribune was out this week with I was curious, so I pasted it into a Word document, 3,600 word in depth story. That's really long for a newspaper story, but it was a good story, worth reading. Sort of looking at the complicated politics of this. You have the speaker versus governor dynamic is what Governor Bruce Rauner has been talking about for a long time. But there's also zoning issues. Apparently, the purchase price that the governor hopes to get for the building is dependent on a significant enhancement of the zoning privileges, which would allow the potential, because very few people think that somebody's going to buy the Thompson Center and just move in and use this building. It's said to be very expensive to operate. It has not aged very well. It's got, people have complained about bugs. The state has not really invested anything in maintaining it, or has not invested what it should in maintaining it. And so it's thought that somebody would want to tear it down and either put up potentially a huge skyscraper or a number of smaller buildings there. But, you know, the city has been burned in the past with people buying entire blocks. There's an area of Chicago called Block 37, which sat vacant for a long time and really became kind of a thorn in the side of city planners. So there's a lot of complicated politics. And what we heard this week was Chicago Mayor Rahm Emanuel coming out and saying that, you know, one of his sticking points, and he has some, you know, sway over the zoning decisions and in the city, obviously. One of his big sticking points is this CTA station, which could cost, I've seen estimates of $100 million potentially to replace. And what do you do with, you know, the millions of people who ride, who, you know, use those stations every year while this construction project would be going on if the building is torn down and replaced with something else? And so, you know, that could really, if the city's not going to pay for it, the state doesn't exactly have a lot of extra money these days, are you going to make a developer pay for it? And that really cuts into the profit margin and presumably the sale price that the state would be able to get for the building.
Yeah, it seems as though this building, because it's been the source of such derision through the years, that something's going to have to happen there at some point. I mean, it's either it's not going to be, it's going to go beyond repair at some point, or somebody's going to come in and redevelop it, it would seem. So somewhere along the line, something's going to have to happen. It's just whether or not it's going to be now or whether it's going to be some type of budget relief for the state of Illinois.
Well, it occurs to me that this whole thing is symbolic of what's going on. Back in the day, when you didn't have this antagonism between the governor's office and the Democrats, a Jim Thompson or Jim Egger or George Ryan would have kind of got this done behind the scenes, would have sat down with the mayor, and it would have been Mayor Daley in most of those instances, and said, okay, let's figure out how we're going to take care of the L station. We want to sell the building site so that some developer will come in, and I think one of the state officials said that the Thompson Center now takes up about 1 million square feet, but they think that the lot on which it sits could have a building with 3 million square feet. In other words, triple the capacity that the building has. And you would have an agreement worked out, and it would be done without this acrimony and all these harsh words, and the state would be allowed to sell it, the zoning changes would go through, there would be a side agreement, who is going to pay to keep the L station there, because I'm thinking if I'm a developer, I certainly want that L station to be there, bringing hundreds of thousands of people onto my property on a daily basis, where they would be seeing the other shops and venues that I'm offering. And it would have been worked out pretty amicably without all of these harsh words.
And Tony, in Chicago, are people even talking about this or paying much attention to it?
It's getting a lot of attention. And this block, I mean, it's right in the heart of the loop. So you're talking about a density issue here. If you're talking about, as Charlie said, tripling the size of the building, how many people can that one block hold? The point is that you have not just the relationship between the governor and the mayor that's been obviously well documented where that stands, but also just what the people who live around there or work around there are going to be saying about, well, how big do we really want this building to be? Because you're talking about adding a lot more people, and that's something that the alderman or the city council in Chicago is very sensitive of when you're talking about a major redevelopment like this.
Time now for our notes from the field. Brian Mackey, we'll start with you.
Yeah, there was a tragic story out of Will County last week. Apparently, it's gotten a lot of media attention in the Chicago area, but a toddler, a 1.5-year-old girl, was found dead in a home that was later found to be determined to be filled with trash, and there were squatters living there, and the local authorities ended up condemning it. Well, it came out that the State Department of Children and Family Services had visited the home, apparently just a few hours before the girl was reported missing. She was eventually, as I said, found dead in the home. And the director of the Department of Children and Family Services was questioned about that at a hearing this week. He said, we don't remove people from homes just because they're untidy. But it's also come out this week that director may be on his way out. DCFS has been a troubled agency, to say the least. It's had a lot of turnover at the top, and it seems like stability of leadership has been something that's hard to come by.
Charlie Wheeler?
Well, we were talking about the Thompson Center sale as being a source of revenue for the state of Illinois, and we certainly do need it. The Commission on Government Forecasting and Accountability put out their latest monthly report, and it showed that through the first 10 months of the fiscal year, our general funds revenues, that's the state's main checkbook, are off by roughly $1.2 billion. It's almost 5% from what they were a year ago.
And Tony?
I'll go back to the courtroom. 61 social services around Illinois, rape counselors, addiction treatment services. They were back in court suing to get the money that they're owed by the state of Illinois that they haven't been paid because of the impasse. Their lawyer asked the question, why would the state enter the contracts knowing that they wouldn't, with these organizations, knowing that there would not be a budget or a way to pay them? But the attorneys for the state say they're trying to spin straw into gold, and that there are clauses in their contract saying if there's no appropriation, they don't have to be paid. So we'll see what the appellate court judges rule on that one.
And that's where we'll leave it for this week. Members of our broadcast included Charlie Wheeler, Brian Mackey, and Tony Arnold. You can get a podcast of our show at nprillinois.org. You can also find us on NPR One. Just look for State Week. The production assistance for the program today provided by Bob Meyer. I'm Sean Crawford.
You've been listening to State Week, a program of commentary and analysis of events in Illinois state politics and government. State Week is produced in the state capital by public radio station NPR Illinois. This is IPR, Illinois Public Radio.